quite a while to set it up, too. It seemed like Old City Hall was ready to go.
Yeah, sorry for the distance.
Hello, Planning Commission.
Can you hear us all right?
Well, look, I'm no longer a planner commissioner.
Longer a planter commissioner.
Or a planted commissioner.
Yeah. Planted would be worse, I guess. Yeah.
I will call to order the Thursday, September 12th, 2019 regular meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission. And I will ask for Commissioner roll call, please.
Susan Torgerson, Commissioner.
Commissioner Rob McFarland.
Commissioner Heather Colon.
Commissioner James Bovers.
I'm Commissioner Scott Greenberg, acting as vice chair, acting as chairperson tonight. Second item on our agenda is approval of the agenda. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
I'd like to make a change to it.
No, the agenda.
Oh, the agenda. Sorry. I was ready on the next thing. Sorry.
Is there a second to approve the agenda?
Second.
Okay. So motion was made by Commissioner McFarland and seconded by Commissioner Torgerson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? None opposed? Motion passes unanimously. We are now on item number 3, approval of minutes of the August 22nd, 2019 Planning Commission meeting. Let's get a motion on the floor first. Is there a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Is there a second?
A second.
Okay. Moved by Commissioner McFarland, seconded by Commissioner Colon.
Yep.
Thank you. And Commissioner Torgerson had a correction.
A correction, yeah. My name's spelled incorrectly. On the roll call, it's S-U-Z-A-N, not S-U-S-A-N.
We'll make that correction.
Thank you.
Any other corrections to the minutes? Yes.
Yeah, but kind of a question about the rules on this. Normally I would excuse myself, but do we need my vote? We shouldn't, right? With four?
Two, three, four.
No.
Four.
Okay.
We don't need
okay.
it. We don't need you, James.
That's fine. So I'll say the vote.
Okay. Any other changes? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes of August 22nd, 2019 Planning Commission as amended, say aye.
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 Aye. Has anybody opposed? None. So that motion also passes 4-0. Correct?
Or
do you abstain?
Yeah, I'll abstain, yes.
And one abstention. Okay. Item number 4. This is a time when members of the public can speak to the Planning Commission on anything you'd like to talk about. Do you have anything to talk about? Okay. All right. There is no public comment this evening, so we will move right to item number 5. And this is a presentation on the initial buildable lands inventory and analysis. And we have Jesse Reynolds, our long-range planner, to give us a presentation in a very large, very dark council chambers.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully it doesn't echo too much. I was trying to cut down on the glare for the display. So some of you may remember a few months ago, I did a presentation on a kind of an overview GIS analysis on development constraints we have within the city. Some of them were what we referred to as full constraints, regards to physical limitations. We can't really develop there. Other ones were kind of more man-made limitations with infrastructure. And then at the end of that, I mentioned that the city was participating in a mandatory study of what growth we have received. The time period is January 1st, 2012 to December 31st of last year, 2018. It was basically taking all our permit data, massaging it and putting it into our GIS system and running some analysis to feed some spreadsheets that are managed by King County. So this is all in compliance with the Growth Management Act. It's kind of a precursor to comprehensive plan updates. It happens every 8 years. It used to be referred to as the buildable land study. Now, in King County, we call it an urban growth capacity study. So that is basically asking three questions. That is, are the zoning densities being achieved? And then the follow-on to that, once we know that, is, are growth targets being met? And is there sufficient capacity for remaining growth targets? And so for part one, we've completed part one, and we've turned it into King County, and we're waiting for feedback on that, which we should get back relatively soon because part two is supposed to start next month. And now that we've done the study, we felt it was valuable to share it with you all, just to kind of give you an update on what kind of growth we've seen in the past 7 years. So I will run through some numbers. This will be a pretty brief presentation, but just more numbers to expose to you so we could save time for the main attraction tonight, which is viewshed analysis by our UW team.
Jesse, I have a quick question before you start.
Yes.
What is it that you're looking for from the Planning Commission tonight? Or are you looking for feedback? Are you answering questions? Or is this just simply a presentation of what's already been submitted to King County?
This will be more of a presentation, just simply a presentation, informational,
okay,
to kind of help. I mean, the goal is kind of like background knowledge to help feed future decisions, to kind of put a framework. You know, you've all seen the development around town, and now we're putting it in numbers. So, I mean, you're welcome to have comments at any point. I guess I didn't have a specific tangible thing I wanted to get out of it, otherwise just to provide you with information.
Well, I think, as Commissioner Greenberg's saying, I believe what you're trying to do is to educate us for future decision making.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Well, yes. Yeah.
So this will be coming back to you when we update our land use element of our comprehensive plan, which will be next year. And the growth targets, the residential and employment growth targets that are established by the Puget Sound Regional Council, will feed directly into our comp plan, our land use element update. So this is a precursor to that.
So in a data flow process standpoint, the information that was completed previously that you're giving us a synopsis of tonight went into King County, from which they're building out these new targets. Is that kind of the concept?
The targets have not been established yet.
Yeah, not yet.
But I'm assuming it's to inform towards, yes, that eventual decision. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the technical side of things, the numbers that feed the policy that's being made. As far as representatives within our region, Mark Hoffman is on the policy side of it. We don't have...
For those who don't know who Mark is...
I'm sorry, he's the planning director for Snoqualmie. So I've been representing North Bend on the technical committee, which kind of is more of the nuts and bolts, how things get decided, how the analyses are made. But as far as policy for the Upper Valley, it's Mark Hoffman, planning director of Snoqualmie. So to kind of give you an idea of the distribution throughout town of each one of these points, which kind of at this scale, it's a little bit hard to see. The next slide zooms in on some areas. But each one of these black points is a single residential development. So that is a building. If it's a home, it's one dot. If it's an apartment building, it's one dot. Really, there was only one out of all of these developments. There's really only one multifamily unit, which is Orchard Street Apartments. There's also Phoenix Plaza, but that's considered a mixed use, so that didn't quite make it into this segment. But you could see a lot of development in our low-density residential neighborhoods in the eastern half of the city, and not so much residential in the central core, downtown commercial and outlying areas. This is more of a zoom in on the eastern parts of the city. You can see Pulte River Glen up to the north with Ranger Station cottages, and then a bunch of development off of the Stilson and Maloney Grove area.
This is inclusive of the full 6-year period, right?
Yes. Yeah, and the cutoff is a little sticky because of just the timing with our data comes from permits and when homes are actually occupied, you know, when a permit is finaled and when the population actually moves in.
Which trigger are you using, pulled permit or occupancy certificate?
We're a final permit.
Final.
Yeah. So it's, you know, we'll, for the 2018 to 2026, we'll leave off where we stopped at this point.
Okay.
And so to look at the total units, how it's distributed throughout the different zones, low density residential received the majority of it. We've got a total of 871 new units were constructed between 2012 and 2018. And the 871 were on 793 land parcels. So that's low density residential intensive. And from what I can tell, our densities are pretty good. So the densities on the right side, that's that discounts tracts, open space, and right-of-way. So
net density?
Yes. And the kind of loose rule of thumb, which is, I guess, still being refined with the on the policy side of things, is that if your zoning is as dense as the less intensive zone, then you're okay. So if LDR, which is 4 units per acre, is greater than 2 units, which is CLDR, the less dense one, then you're okay. Or if
can you say that again?
So as far as residential, it's, you know, each zone has an intensity as far as density goes. For low density residential, it's 4 units per acre. For cottage residential, it's 10. For constrained low density residential, it's 2. So if your zone meets the density of the least intense, or the one grade lesser intense zone, then you're meeting your goals. Does that make sense? It's kind of hard.
I'm still a little fuzzy on it.
Who sets the goals?
It's King County, Puget Sound Regional Council, and a couple other people from Puget Sound cities. Scott might actually know how the group gets decided a little better than I do, but it's a few representatives from the region.
It's the King County, so putting PSRC aside for a minute, because that's their instrumental when growth targets come in, but not, I think, not so much on capacity. But it's the Growth Management Planning Council, I think that's what they're still called, the King County. And there's a staff team that gets put together to try to come up with the technical workings behind all this. But ultimately, I believe if it's still the same way, it's Growth Management Planning Council, which is a probably 30-member body of elected officials representing Seattle, unincorporated King County, Bellevue, and the suburban cities.
And so individual cities don't get a say in this goal setting?
We participate in the process.
We can give input, but we're...
We don't choose our own.
Right. Every jurisdiction in King County will be using the exact same process. Although if there are nuances between cities, like if one city has something unique that other cities don't have, like I can't even think of what one is, but there's something totally unique, then they might get some credit or that might be considered as part of this analysis. When the growth targets come up later, that's his step two or phase two, then the cities do have a bit more say in what kind of growth targets the cities are willing to accept.
So by growth target, it's looking out 15 to 20 years in the future. For our last comprehensive plan update, it was 2031, and then they adjusted the values to 2035. And so we were basically given some numbers that we should be meeting by those dates, and we got pretty close already. And what that means politically, we'll have to wait and see.
So to take you on a little bit of a sidebar, the last time that there was the certification of our comprehensive plan by the Puget Sound Regional Council, they found that in their determination, we had exceeded our growth targets. And that was a direct conflict of interest from what the city of North Bend and many other cities saw as the purpose of the targets under the Growth Management Act. Those were always intended as a floor, that you accommodate a minimum amount of growth so that we're planning consistent with urban densities to protect the rural areas from sprawl. Puget Sound Regional Council in the last go-around said, well, we think that certain cities kind of in the rural areas, regardless of whether or not they're in the urban growth areas, should not exceed those targets by a significant amount. And so there was a lot of back and forth, and there probably still will be at the next go-around about the interpretation of whether those targets are intended as floors or if they could be interpreted as ceilings. So we feel, as the City of North Bend, that if they're interpreted as ceilings, we're going to run afoul of the Growth Management Act, and we have so much more capacity within our existing city limits, regardless of our surrounding urban growth area, that we'd wind up with probably some legal challenges from developers saying, I have the right to develop, I'm within your city limits, and you're not allowing me. So more to come on that when we get into the targets.
Mike, just to clarity on that, I know a little bit about that. If it's my understanding that most all of East King County cities, such as North Bend, Carnation, right, were in that, lumped into that, right? So it was not North Bend alone. It was essentially everything outside of Seattle and Bellevue.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's important for us to understand. It wasn't us on an island getting that feedback. Mm-hmm. And don't I recall there was actually some, at least a court case or more in regard to whether or not it's a floor or a ceiling?
I have not heard of a court case. I'd be really interested to hear about that. The matter, it seems like, kind of died because the PSRC decided to certify those cities. Fully certify their comp plans.
Okay.
They left a little bit of language in there to say this discussion will be continued, but I'd be really interested if you know about a court case to hear about that.
We'll have to do a little research. I thought there was something came out of Olympia around that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So back to my original question. I was trying to understand, you had a formula. We said, well, if it's like this, then that's good, but if it's like that, then not so good. And that's what I was trying to follow you on, Jesse.
So for residential zoning,
uh-huh.
There's a lot of criteria that goes into a zone. One of it is the density. How many units can go in a single acre is
uh-huh.
what we use. So for our most common residential, which is low-density residential, you can have 4 units per a single acre.
Uh-huh.
For the more intense, which is cottage residential, you could have 10 units per acre. So that's one step up as far as intensity. So for cottage residential to meet its goal, it just has to meet the one zone that's one grade down, so the 4 units per acre.
Okay, so it just has to be, okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, so it's, you're kind of giving some wiggle room because there's a lot of factors that go into what makes density. You know, it could be critical areas, it could be, you know, stormwater is a huge thing out here as far as taking up land or needed right of way or other tracts. And so it's kind of giving a little bit of wiggle room as far as that goes.
And is what you just described, being able to use the next least intensive zone density, is that something that's unique to North Bend, or is that something that is being used throughout King County now?
That was something that was decided in the technical committee for King, that which is basic, for the King County Urban Growth Capacity Technical Committee. It's basically open to whoever can come, and we've been at more than half of those meetings, and that was brought up in one of them. And So that was what was decided.
I like that. I just hadn't heard of it before. It's new.
I'm anticipating that there's going to be some confusion. And I would say perhaps I'm a little confused, and I think I tend to know these kind of things fairly well. So, you know, mentioned several times the 4 DU per acre, which is what our code says for LDR. Mm-hmm. And yet you've got a number here that's saying that we achieved 7.72. I think not only would some in council find that a little shocking, but the public might very much misinterpret into saying, wait a minute, that means you're really cramming nearly twice as many homes into the zone as permitted, quote, by code. So can you give us a little bit more on the math between the two and how that,
sure,
why that's consistent?
Yeah, so I guess,
before you do that, the overall density, you said, I think you were talking about the net part, is the number on the right on that chart there, the overall density for all of that zone, or is that from the new growth that this is applied to?
That's great.
That's from the new growth.
Okay.
That's a great question in itself, yeah.
And so the difference is when within North Bend's municipal code, let's just say for an example, you have a 3.2 acre lot that you want to develop in low density residential. So that means that with 4 dwelling units per acre, you could get 12 lots out of that. And that's, I guess you could call that gross density, where that's just, you look at the piece of land that you start with, and this is the amount of homes that you get out. Whereas these numbers, they take that whole lot, and then they discount the right-of-way, public open space, and other tracts, whether it's utility or stormwater. And so that's why you can't take those numbers and then apply them to the North Bend Code, because the North Bend Code doesn't discount those public spaces or non-developable spaces.
So again, I'm anticipating that's going, as this information is shared out into the public, that's going to be a critical question on how you explain the difference between gross and net.
Okay, so you think I should?
I think you need to really think about that.
Okay, yeah, thanks. I think that's a
maybe even just if you're doing this presentation to another group, have something underneath explaining how overall achieved density was achieved, and to answer Commissioner Bover's question also on there, make it real clear this is for the new development between 2012 and 2018.
Okay.
And it's non-existing. And the one other thing, just giving some feedback on the presentation that I would have found helpful, is for each zone on the left just to indicate what is the minimum density, or what's the density.
What is
that
the
zone,
DU?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
To give you some comparison. So anything, because I agree, I mean, this will hit next door.
Yes, in
and
seconds.
And all of a sudden, there will be 72 comments about how the city is, you know, all in favor of development. Look at that number. So,
no, those are great comments. Thank you. It sometimes it takes a third party to review what I put together to help me realize.
We get that you're in the weeds and focused on, which, speaking of which, I don't know how you would handle this one, but I believe the only missing residential zone here is the CLDR, and because nothing has been developed in that.
Yeah, correct, so right? We could put a zero up there for CLDR.
I would suggest you just put a zero in, and then you've got every zone.
Yeah. All right. I've got some homework.
Give you a lot of credit to do all this. This stuff used to make my head spin.
Is there one reason you're retired?
Yeah. No, that's part of it. I had people doing this for me, so.
Yeah.
But it was still these exact kinds of questions.
Yeah, well, there was one of us.
Yeah, we would get them from council members and the public, and it's like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, no, this is good. I guess this is a safe environment to bring this in front of right now. No, that's good. I'll make those updates before it gets presented again.
And then buildable acres, you might want to have a definition for that on the same slide. Or net buildable acres.
Okay. So that's residential. It's not showing up as well as I hoped, but we had a couple non-residential developments that occurred. They're in kind of the black hash marks, and I'll just go to the next slide, which lists them. This was a little bit harder for North Bend to compare to the rest of the county in that non-residential. When King County's thinking of non-residential, they're thinking of commercial and industrial, but a lot of what we saw were public facilities. And so they apply Florida area ratios to these numbers, and we have those in our comp plans, in our comp plan. And so are you guys familiar with Florida area ratios? It's a way to quantify density of a lot. So
no.
So let's say you have a lot that's 1,000 square feet, and you have a building on it that's 500 square feet, then that's a Florida area ratio of 0.5. So you could also have, if you have a building that is if it's like a 1,000 square foot lot, and then it's four stories of 500 square feet, so that's 2,000 square feet total building on a 1,000 square foot lot, then that's a Florida area ratio of 2. For our Florida area ratios, for our industrial lands, it's for EP1 it was 0.4 and EP2 it was 0.5, but we didn't quite make it to that. I believe I thought I put it on this presentation, but apparently the version didn't make it over. We were a little bit lower than that, and so at the end of this exercise, we get to give comments as to why, and that was just the nature of the development that we saw was not all commercial. And also the commercial that we do get out here in our more industrial areas is a lot of, it's industrial in nature. It's a lot of storage is required, and so the ratios that King County was looking for, we didn't exactly meet. But I feel that because we saw so little non-residential development over the past 7 years, I don't, my anticipation is that it's not going to be much of an issue when the policy folks take a look.
Well, so maybe you probably just stated this, but so what is the measurement requirement that they are looking for?
It's pretty open for King County. I think they wanted us to compare it to what our numbers were within our comp plan. And within our comp plan, EP1 was a Florida area. Florida, I think it was. Let's see, I have it written down actually. For it was 0.4 for EP1 and 0.5 for EP2. And so David and I sat down and looked at those numbers, and his thought was that our goals should be closer to 0.3.
And so I'm. Apologize, I'm still not quite following. I get what you're saying about the 0.4, 0.5 FAR, but is that what, it doesn't seem to be what you're representing in the gross site acres column. So how am I relating those two, or am I just missing you?
No, what happened is I didn't put up the latest version of the PowerPoint, and the table that I had below this one is not showing up right now. So I'll make sure that is up there next time.
Okay.
Do that.
I had a question. It says that Nintendo built something in 2012. Isn't it been here much longer than that, or did they just add an addition or something?
It was interior. Yeah, they added a mezzanine inside the existing building footprint.
Okay.
I think along those lines, I'm assuming the 2015 Opstad project is talking about portables.
Yes.
Right.
So it's pretty hard to calculate a Florida area ratio of a school that.
Well, and I guess so, similar to a few comments about the previous chart, I think some of this needs footnoting, because somebody newer to the community is going to say, Opstat was only built in 2015. You know, it's unintentionally misleading. And I did the same thing on Nintendo. I was trying to think, well, what did they add? All I remembered them adding was a parking lot, not their main facility, right? So there was a few of the, and then purely out of curiosity, I don't know where Wanted Espresso is.
That's
what? It's awesome.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I wasn't passing judgment on its quality. Yeah. I just don't know where.
It's by the Shell station.
By the Shell. Oh, yes. Okay, yeah. Now I know where. Right. And Kinship Dog Arena.
Yeah, what's Kinship Dog Arena?
Where's Kinship Dog Arena?
It's off of. That's just on the other side of the South Fork. I can't.
I think it's 8th Street, just across the street from Tollgate Farm Park. There's a row of houses there. It's a just a kind of backyard arena as a home-based business.
Okay, along 8th.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If you have a very special dog, then you might want to take it to Kinship.
And so they build a facility. I thought it was an existing home. Oh, I know what you mean. There's a barn-looking building in
there. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So let me ask you all this. Given the level of confusion and how little non-residential development we've had, is it even worth having this up here to present in the future, or is it?
I think so.
I think it's important because we need to know what goals we need.
Yeah, I think people want to know.
Reach.
Okay.
And it is part of our requirement, right? So
yeah,
I think finding the way to make it meaningful is a challenge, for sure.
Yeah.
And in fact, one of my—I wasn't sure. It looks like the order was driven by the zone.
Yeah.
And I wondered if maybe by year might be more informative. It kind of shows the bill.
Okay.
But
yeah, no.
Really, a question. I don't know what's the proper order, but
the zone would be the better option.
You like the zone?
If you tie in what the ratio is.
Right.
Right.
And
this chart, then the zone makes sense. But
and,
as it is right here, we're just showing acreage.
Well,
and here makes more sense, I think.
And on that, and I had that thought too, and I wondered, you know, in the previous chart, it was an all up. And here we've presented individual projects and four in the DC. Isn't that really a combined number? And maybe it doesn't make any sense to kind of make the charts similar in presentation, but it just occurred to me, you know, we weren't looking at each individual project in the residential, we're looking at the all of LDR, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so here we've broken out individual projects within a zone. It's just a little different way of presenting it. There's so few that it makes sense. I mean, I definitely like seeing the list. Thankfully, it's unfortunately, it's only a page, but it just throws you off a little bit, I think, in the trying to absorb the number.
Okay. Yeah, these are taken from the form that I filled out for King County, and this is all great feedback because, you know, I was just so into it for a while, and now that I'm trying to convey it to you all that weren't involved, yeah.
I'm going to speak for myself. I think that my ultimate feedback is I totally get why you are compiling technical data for the technical people who know what, and you all know what you're talking about. But you're now transitioning to needing to explain this to the lay public, and they're not going to have a clue. And it's probably not going to be a reaction nearly so much on the commercial side, but as we were pointing out on the residential, growth is a hot button topic, and so any opportunity to eliminate a misperception of what you're trying to say is what you want to focus on. You definitely need to be able to speak to, but even you know, we're expected to have a certain level of understanding that an individual resident is not. Mm-hmm. So you've got to think about how are they understanding that information.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Do you think it would be valuable if I created a softer, more user-friendly version for the public to review?
No. I think this is getting there anyway. I think this is fine. With some of the comments we've already put in, I think that would help a lot to even a person without whatever knowledge we may have, that I think it would be easy enough to read with those added parts. You know, I think you're really close here. Just okay. Because it's presentable.
Okay.
And you have another... I think you said you had another document that had the rate that we accomplished in that time frame, the, what is it called? The
Florida area ratio
for us. And I think you said that we fell behind on this one.
Yeah, a little bit, but that number is mostly geared towards commercial.
Right, and I think that's important to know that we fell behind in that, and it's not really being communicated on this document.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay.
Just more definition and context for some of the terminology and the numbers, I think would make it really more understandable. And the other thing I suggest is I would lead with the takeaway, which you kind of did here. You explained we weren't quite meeting the target for floor area ratio, and then you went on to explain why. But and I know we were maybe abbreviating a presentation, but I think that point that you were making that we didn't quite meet it should be up there somewhere.
Okay.
So people who are more visual and who get confused by all the details can at least have the takeaway, the big picture takeaway, that we're not meeting this.
Okay.
Or we are meeting the residential. Yeah. I think that would help if you're going to present this elsewhere. I also want to be cognizant of our time. We on the agenda had the GIS presentation at 7:25, and it's now 7:40. But we're asking—I just don't know how much time is needed for the GIS presentation.
We estimated 20 minutes to a half hour relative
we're good.
Yeah, and that pretty much is wrapped up.
I forgot there was one. Just one more slide. Sorry.
We're there. So I really.
Well, I had some comments about that snow scene.
Was that in North Bend? Where was that taken?
I think we exceeded our capacity there.
It's Tanner Wood.
Yeah, this is Tanner Wood.
It is Tanner Wood Park, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So would you all like me to take your suggestions and update the PowerPoint and send it to you? I don't know if I need to.
From my perspective, it would be good for us. I don't feel like I need to have it presented again, but I'd like an update if you're going to present it elsewhere so that I've got the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Yeah, I will do that. I will update this and send it to you all.
But this will be more useful when we come back to evaluate the new growth targets against our land capacity. Yeah. And that's when I think the rubber will meet the road with what the public's interested in.
Yeah. I think just kind of to get back to what my intention was with this, it's just to kind of keep you abreast as the study's moving along. As you could tell, this is like one third of this one study that's a precursor to the comp plan. And so I guess my hope was to just kind of engage you as we process this stuff, and then I could get feedback from you saying, Jesse, we don't really know what you're talking about here. So no, this is great. I really appreciate constructive criticism. I think we can move on to the next, unless somebody has any more questions.
I think we lost
Mr. Chair. I think we frightened off the other presenter.
I got it. No, he just stepped out for a moment, but he'll be back in a second. I'll just I'll do a brief general introduction. So This is the second year that we've had a relationship with the University of Washington Masters in GIS and Sustainability Management program. Unfortunately, this is that program's last year, but it's been really great. This Dr. Tim Nyerges is the lead of the program, who was also on my thesis committee when I was getting a planning master's. And so when I came to North Bend, I reached out to him to see if there were opportunities to do some collaborations, and he said, well, we have this capstone course for the students. Last year, we had a successful program that looked at bike lane widths for right-of-way within the city, so that's more of like a public works technical output that'll help us with restriping. You know, bike lanes are one of the many priorities we have. For this one, I guess I kind of wanted to get a little bit I wanted to get a little bit closer to politics, in that a lot of we've seen a lot of growth. You know, we all want a vibrant downtown, but we also highly value the views, the scenery around us. And there's a, you know, a lot of discussion of we have to preserve the views, and I wanted to take an objective approach to what happens if we raise building heights. What views do we lose? What views do we still have? And so I put in a proposal this year to the course for doing a viewshed analysis of the trade-off between mountain views and building heights downtown. And I was lucky that three students of this course accepted it. So Drew is able to be here today.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Before I give the steering wheel over to Drew completely, I just wanted to emphasize that this is it's an online master's course. They all have full-time jobs aside from this. They did a great job of cranking out a lot of work after they come home from work, and I'm really impressed with it. The scope is somewhat limited intentionally, so we didn't overburden them, but I feel like the product that we got is a great proof of concept. And so I'll stop talking and introduce you to Drew Garcia here, who will take the lead.
All righty, thank you. So if anyone's not too familiar with a viewshed analysis is, basically we're taking the idea of different points or locations of preference provided by Jesse, and we want to determine what we can see and what we cannot see, you know, based on those location points. And so I have been through North Bend a few times, but I do understand quite well what it's like to preserve the value of your scenery and also some of the historic buildings in the area. I'm actually a country boy, not a city slicker, although I look like one. Grew up in Wyoming and then moved to a little town called Prescott. Prescott, Arizona. Has anybody heard of it?
Yeah.
Yep, retirement community. My parents are there still. And similar to North Bend, there's, you know, zonal height restrictions. So the highest building you have are going to be historical, some over 100 years old. And you can't build higher than that in certain areas. And you also have to preserve your viewpoint for a mountain range all around, similar to this, to North Bend. And just to give you just, you know, for the visual aesthetic, these are the views that you're, you know, looking to preserve. This is the downtown region, very small, similar to where we're at here today. That's Thumb Butte right there. And, you know, Arizona sunsets are gorgeous. And so that's something you want to be, this is the downtown region. This is actually not a model. It's been miniaturized. It's got a miniaturized effect, but this is the historic. This building right here is a old hotel, Plaza Yampa, known for being haunted. This is the courthouse. This is the tallest building next to this new establishment or building right here, which is just a parking garage. So for it being a highly tourist area, bringing a lot of people in and also preserving that recreational feel, how can we bring more people in, you know, and get them to comfortably park and stay? Well, this was the best option. Some old buildings were ready to go down that couldn't preserve, and that's as tall as they can build. So this kind of hits home for me doing this analysis, because I really appreciate and understand what it's like to be in a small town and make it feel like a small town as it grows and develops into a more denser region. There's a bunch of pictures here just for aesthetic, you know, just for a little change of pace. My parents still live here. They have a view of Granite Mountain. This is an original building that's still there for pioneersmen. It's a pioneer home. Beautiful lakes all around right here. This is Granite Mountain. Here, the views are preserved throughout. So, and I'm going to kind of jump around. This is not really a linear presentation. It's more of just a way to navigate a different perspective. So as Jesse had kind of mentioned, and as we segue into this, we want to understand or get an idea of how can we increase density in the downtown region by exploring the current height, zonal height codes, building codes, while maybe adjusting those in the future or potential future to see what that would look like from the pedestrian street level. So as we're walking along the street, you know, North Bend Way in different locations, can I still see Mount Si? And how high can I build in order for us to be able to still see that, and or is there going to be an obstruction? And the way to increase the density is to go up. And so we want to see how high can we actually go up without, you know, kind of destroying the whole aesthetic of the of our town here. So here's kind of a, you know, 20,000 foot view of what we're looking at. We have our Mount Si region here, Little Si, and then our city, and then we've got our, it's kind of hard to see, if I zoom in it's not going to help, but we've got our potential new buildings or parcels here in the orange. Currently permitted buildings and then existing structures, existing downtown buildings, and then existing buildings outside the downtown region. But if we zoom in here a little bit, we can kind of get a closer look of what we're trying to develop here. Maximize.
So I gave him a couple of ideas of where affordable housing projects were proposed, and so that's what the orange is. The two pieces to the south are the senior center, and then the elongated piece is where the park and ride is, and
this piece here.
So a building might not necessarily look like that, but with setbacks in the parcel, that's how it came out.
Yeah. This data, I think, we took from 2016. So I haven't modified the data due to time constraints, but...
I'm assuming the dot is the viewpoint?
Yeah, so this is the vantage point from the ground. There's four of them here along North Bend Way, and then we've got one back here. And then I believe we had one situated up here. But in this scope, there it is right here. This is where new development would be, potentially. And then there's nothing behind here. And then new development here with nothing behind here. But this direction, facing this way, is where we would be looking at Mount Si. And I'll show that in a 3D rendering of what that would look like. So that's... Pardon, yeah.
Question, the proposed buildings there by Ace, remind me, were those proposed to be over 35?
These potential parcels, these parcels here?
So the background with that is there hasn't been a rendering yet for the parcel off of West North Bend Way, but a few months ago, architect consultants then proposed affordable housing to council, and I believe it was in the range of six stories, and I think that was a bit.
I think to the commissioner's question regarding the senior center site, if I recall, yes, it was above the current, but yeah. I can't recall if it was four or five stories. It was not six.
It wasn't six. Okay.
Not six, but it might have been five.
Yeah, we're going to explore what that would look like, or in translation of measurements in unit for feet. So what would it look like at 50 feet max if it was, if the zonal code was pushed beyond 35. So our objective here So what we did is a 3D exploratory analysis, and it's a viewshed analysis and a line of sight analysis. And this is just getting an idea of what it would look like if we were to make a geospatial observation and calculate exact units of measurements of these point locations or observation and our target location, and is there any obstruction between those two points. So we have us on the ground and then Mount Si, different points along Mount Si. And then if there's obstruction between there, what is that, and what would that look like to the viewer? So what we don't want, though, is something like this, and that's kind of the purpose of analysis. you know, there's value behind these seats if that wall was knocked down. And you wouldn't want to diminish the value of some of these land parcels, and we would like to optimize that. So here's how we kind of begin.
Great picture.
This is our viewshed tool that we use in exploratory. Basically, you have your point location right here, and you have a range of measurements where you can view vertically and horizontally. And then you have a radius. How far? What's in front of me? 1 meter in front of me. In that case, it's a brick wall. But we can go as far as we'd like, up to 5,000 meters or something like that, or even further. And so from this point location at this building, we could see, okay, is there anything in front of this building by maybe 20 meters? And then how far away is that mountain? Is there anything obstructing us between us and that mountain? And so that's kind of the whole concept. And you see right here what that would look like. Basically, if you just take, like, if you were holding a flashlight at your forehead and you had a bunch of objects in front of you, and you're going to get shadows behind those objects. If you're standing on the other side of that, wherever those shadows are means you cannot, you know, see those objects. So, and then there's the inverse perspective coming from the other way. And this is more, we can get into more technical details if anybody has those questions, but basically what I would do in a more precise calculation is determine exactly what these numbers are at those point locations. If there is an agreed consensus on, you know, where exactly are we going to build, and has it been agreed that we're going to build here and how high, then I would get exact measurements and be able to remedy something that would coincide with what we're looking for. So this is the visual aesthetic here. We have our point location over here, which is the riverfront point location. And basically what we're doing, we have our azimuth, which is we're projecting light, that's our light source, going onto the mountain. And so wherever you see this gray area, this is using LIDAR data, by the way. So the LIDAR data captures anything that's got any texture on the surface or any, you know, vertical point. And so it's not 100% accurate, but it does a pretty good job in determining what might be in the way. And so you can kind of see some, you know, some color here, blue meaning it's visual, and gray meaning it's not visual. And then when we shine basically our light from other point locations, we have a cross between the two. The light basically crosses one another, and that's this yellow area, which is means there's multiple perspective where you can see the mountain. And so any gray bits on this mountain is something you potentially couldn't see. But for the most part, from this point location back here, we can see almost the whole mountain, given that there's, you know, I mean, there's some very tall trees in the area. So there may be some obstruction, but as far as buildings are concerned, we have a pretty good view. So we want to be able to maintain something, or at least how can we, how high can we build and still see above this 1,500-foot contour line? And so we took point locations in two scenarios here, where if we can still see above this line, how much of that could we see?
So 1,500 feet was kind of an arbitrary threshold that I gave. Like when you look at the mountain, like where's the value of view? And I kind of arbitrarily said be equal to the top of Little Si. And then if you project that out, so above the mountain with the beautiful rock buttresses and the steep trees and the haystack, that's where the 1,500 comes from.
And just to clarify, sure. So this image is of nothing proposed. This is existing. And did you say ignores or captures trees?
So all this the bumps here, the rippling, that's from the LiDAR data, which captures canopies.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Now, this is a rendering using LiDAR data, and then we overlay that or drape some imagery from software. So, and you can change, you know, whatever base map that is. This is for more of a simplistic aesthetic. So, yeah, LiDAR data is very helpful, but I'm going to show you what it would look like without the LiDAR data. So we're kind of like on a flat plane, and that's where we remove elements of trees.
The point for that was your proposal would be behind you. So it would be in that view shed there.
I'm sorry, I can't hear anything.
I was saying that the viewpoint you used there, your proposed was behind you there. So that's why you wouldn't see proposed wouldn't affect this.
Okay, and then so from this area here, we've got so this is the calculated version. This is beyond the exploratory analysis. This is creating an actual output where you can determine elevation, where the elevation changes, and where you can what's visible and what's not visible. This is coming from the perspective of Little Si onto town. So we're actually now at the mountain looking down, and any gray space, once again, is something that we potentially would not be able to see. And then anything with green or color is what we could see. And then now when we remove LiDAR and we just have a two-dimensional flat surface, this is what that would look like without any trees or, you know, objects that would be in the way. And so it's just a little bit different perspective. You can kind of see these are likely very tall trees. If you were shining a light, that would cast a shadow, and over here as well. And so that's kind of the more calculated version when you drape the output of your viewshed analysis over the land. And you can really do this at any, so you can set this at any, there's a vertical offset you can determine, and basically we just said, all right, if we're 5 feet tall, yeah, what would that look like? Or you can do something higher. For example, if you wanted to put a camera somewhere in the city of the mountain, which you have, you can put that in different locations, determine in advance without actually having to go to that physical site first, and plot up a bunch of different points and say, okay, I want this camera so high, and I need to point it towards the mountain. What would that look like? And you can, you know, get yourself a visual without running around town first. And the second step to get a more precise singular view would be through this concept called line of sight or visibility. And that's a direct path between you and your target. And so if we're looking over here at the riverfront park where there's potentially new construction, the reason why this polygon is sitting on top of these small polygons is because this is a potential structure in the future. And this is what that would look like at 35 feet tall at current zone. So if we're standing back here and our new building is at max height of 35 feet of current zone, we actually get 3/4 partial obstruction, but we can still see, you know, part of this area here. And that's, keep in mind, this is using any LiDAR data that's been calculated in this. So there could also be trees right here or anything. It's not 100% accurate, but it gives you an idea that these views are obstructed at 40 meters. So within 40 meters, we can't see anything 40, 45, 60.
And the visual point is intended to represent on the sidewalk, 5 foot tall?
This is roughly on the sidewalk, yeah. Yeah. Yep, just kind of an average height. Now, over here, we have also same idea, newly proposed construction. If we were to extend our threshold to 50 foot tall, and this is, it's expanded all the way, but we've got some weird formatting, so this lettering is off. But if we were to expand 50 foot height, we have a fully obstructed view, and that's between the road and the building. So, you know, you could toggle this any way you'd like and just move it around. We were going to attempt to do a live demonstration, but rendering 3D takes time. And so, you know, that's for another day. And so we had the visitor's center. If theoretically, you know, if we were standing at the visitor's center, which I'm sure many of you have before.
The old visitor's center.
No longer. You can see everything at our 1,500-foot contour line and above, and potentially even, you know, below that. So that's current max height at 35. You could see the whole mountain. And we could apply the same concept to Rattlesnake Ridge as well, doing a 360 dome analysis to see what that would look like. And this scenario, we have standard zone 35-foot, same location, just different angle here, different perspective. We've got three-fourths obstruction.
So what this scenario is it's taking the currently allowed maximum building height and with the existing footprints and making all those footprints 35 feet. So that's what it could be built to now, but most buildings in our downtown area aren't 35 feet. So that's kind of what that is.
I think another important thing to add is this is like absolute worst case scenario, and our design standards require a lot of articulation and slope proof and differentiation of heights and so forth, so you wouldn't just see a continuous block like that. It would be a lot more broken up.
Mm-hmm. Let me find myself here. And all right, for our second scenario here, we have use existing buildings and maximum zone heights of 35 feet to analyze views from Mount Si to downtown vantage points. This is actually supposed to be from Mount Si. From downtown to Mount Si, or you can go either way. So we have our existing buildings, all existing buildings increased to 35 feet tall, what that would look like. That's as if every building was remodeled and constructed up to 35 feet in order to increase density downtown. And bear with me, we'll get closer up views as well. So this is kind of your, you know, broader perspective. We've got about 3/4 obstruction from this viewpoint. And if we were to add, now this is the park and ride, so that's not a giant building, but if it was a giant building, theoretically, this is what you would get. You would not get any obstruction if you were at this viewpoint here or even this viewpoint here because you would be in front of the building. So that building can actually be quite tall if you need to optimize that parcel. And then we see here between the two, there's almost no change. And then that's if you add the new buildings. Oh yeah, there is no change. So this new potential building was then increased to a newer threshold of 50 feet. There's no change in your view. Unless you wanted to toggle your viewpoint location to be directly behind that building. Maybe it's, say, 100 yards, see what that would look like. You probably have obstruction from trees rather than anything else. So what we had kind of discovered that in these, you know, with a limited scope, we have limited scope within these point locations. We have obstruction of 75% to 100%. In some cases, in other cases with potential new buildings, there's no obstruction at all at those point locations. And we would want to, you know, consider the city trees, trees owned by the city, what kind of, how high those are, how tall those are, and how they're maintained, and how that would affect any obstruction as well. We did do our analysis with trees owned by the city, but that was a very small number to the existing number of trees in the area. So we actually removed that from our analysis because it became extremely difficult to determine really anything that we were looking at. And I have that in another portion that gets a lot more technical, but for this sake, we're not gonna delve into you know, a lot to do with the city trees and non-city trees. However, if you wanted to get a more accurate idea of what you're looking at a specific parcel, you can apply photorealistic drawings and pictures or architectural renderings and get an idea of this new building that we want to go in. What would that actually look like from all angles of this building? And this is our target, this is our observation point, and can we still see Mount Si, or can we still see Rattlesnake Ridge? And is this building gonna suit our aesthetic within, you know, within the culture of our community? So there's ways to kind of go about and get in more detail. If you wanted to appeal to an audience that's not so tech savvy, but, you know, more visual. So, which in cases, you know, a good majority of people like some, you know, visual aesthetic. And then further recommendations would be to create a web app for maybe the public to explore some of your ideas. And this would allow people to kind of navigate like these proposed ideas and say, oh, I really like this building, it's this tall, or, you know, you can toggle back and forth between different design plans and get an idea of what's going to appeal or be most functional. And that would, you know, include something like a multi-purpose building or multi-use, where you've got commercial at the bottom and residential at the top, or potentially even a, you know, a rooftop of some sort, an observatory, you know, at 50 feet or 35 feet. So you can kind of get a 360 view and kind of, you know, connect people with nature, humans and nature a little bit, while, you know, increasing the density of the town and kind of really optimizing that, like, recreational feel that the city is trying to explore. And this is just another recommendation here of some software that you can use to help generate reports that's necessary for the potential buildings and development within the town, and get into more detail within, you know, a geospatial analysis using 3D and, you know, renderings and imaging. So that's the short and sweet version.
Maybe so we took some screenshots of different building scenarios from a ground view. So in the upper, the name of, so this is around Bendigo and the railroad track. So that is the current building heights. Now keep in mind, our buildings aren't exactly blocks, but that's just, you know, unless you have the custom building shape that's rendered, then this is kind of what we have for now. But you can kind of focus on the views. So that's from Bendigo and the railroad tracks, what you can see of Mount Si right now. And then the next one is if every building was built to maximum zoning currently, which is 35 feet, and then future hypothetical scenario, if every single building was built to a maximum of 50 feet. So this is from Bendigo and the railroad track. And then the next one is...
And our view site might be, or our vertical offset might be a little low here, too. We potentially would be raising that a bit.
It was around 1.8 meters.
Okay.
I did. So this is like your eyeballs at 1.8 meters above the ground. So this is North Bend Way in Bendigo from the, I guess that would be the old Sunset Garage corner. With the current building heights, and then if every one of those buildings was to 35 feet, and then if every one of the buildings was 50 feet. And I mean, as Mike said, the buildings wouldn't exactly be shaped like this, but this is a quick and dirty way to run through scenarios.
It's just kind of like playing with Legos in a visual way, you know. To get an idea.
And put a couple extra blocks on.
Yeah.
Then and to me, these three slides are something that general public would be easily able to grasp.
Right.
If I'm standing in front of the Sunset Garage, which is an iconic location in town, back corner, that's a good way of illustrating the impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you could do, you know, like a little web scene, web app where they can walk the streets and with, you know, certain heights and buildings and toggle that themselves. And you just kind of play with it and see what looks good and what makes sense and what doesn't, you know.
You go through a couple more views if you all are interested. There's a few more of the screenshots that I took.
Oh, is there? Okay.
So, yeah, we did that one. And this one is North Bend Way and Park Street, currently. And North Bend Way and Park Street, if every one of the existing buildings is 35 feet, and now 50 feet. Now, the post office parking lot, currently. Post office parking lot with 35-foot buildings, post office parking lot with 50-foot buildings. And then Sideview. So this is the parking lot. It's Sideview right next to the main building with the pool looking out to Mount Si. So this is currently then 35 feet and 50. And the senior center parking lot currently 35 feet, 50 feet. And that might, that was all of them. It took a long time to render each one of those.
Yeah. You pick good spots.
Thank you. Well, it was, I was just riding on the coattails of his hard work. I had to just pan it to it.
Any questions? Technical questions?
No, that was a great presentation.
Questions? Yeah.
So if we were to ever take this forward into some kind of view shed regulations, it, what would be really critical is to define what those protected view spots are. The converse being, we're not protecting everyone's view in every potential direction. That it's kind of the public view, that's what's critical.
I think this, as I recall, the city of Tacoma did that. Last time I looked at it was probably 10 years ago, but I remember they were one of the few cities that had defined public viewpoints of, and I think it was of Mount Rainier. Might want to take a look at that and see if that's, they still have that. But I don't know what information they used to come up with those.
The city of Snoqualmie, I think Rob will remember this, 15 years ago did the same thing from the Snoqualmie Falls viewpoint. As Snoqualmie Ridge was developed, they wanted to make sure that you could not see the houses from the viewpoint of the falls.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was going to bring up, and I think what's exactly where you're kind of going with your thought is what was critical to that was, in a sense, that was an easy one, right? We you kind of picked this observation platform. You said, this is the view shed. And we don't want to see the man-made structure from it. And that was a pretty clear definitional thing to do, and we did all kinds of interesting studies to show that. And literally, one house in one neighborhood had to have the roof chopped off on the side to create a different roof to meet it. We were, you know, like seeing 6 feet of it.
Yeah.
So for North Bend, that would be where we would have to start this conversation, is trying to determine, you know, as Jesse pointed out, he kind of arbitrarily picked 1,500 feet of elevation as being the iconic view. Well, we will certainly have citizens who would argue that exactly what you can see now, practically to the base in some locations, is what should remain, and there would be those who might be more comfortable with something in between or perhaps even higher. But that will be the critical part, is first defining what is that minimum visual image that you have to have, and that would obviously then lead to area zoning.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and he had also, Jesse determined some points off of North Bend Way, which then, you know, you could play around with the idea of different locations as you were talking about. As we were driving around town today, you know, I noticed there was a newly developed residential neighborhood, like right there in front of a power line, a power
substation.
Yes, a substation.
Right.
And immediately I thought, well, that would not be something I would want to pay for, you know, or, you know, that kind of might diminish the value of that space. And you can determine how can I cover that up in a good way and still, you know, keep the value of these lands in view. You know? So.
Cool. Well, thank
nice.
You. Any further questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It was a great presentation. Look forward to seeing where this goes in the future, if anywhere.
Do any of you have suggestions on next steps for further analysis? From what you've seen today, valuable tools to help you, you know, ideally something like this would, you know, when we sit down and look at our bulk and dimensional standards and figure out maximum building heights for each zone, this could be a potential tool that we use to help inform those decisions.
I think what's in my head is what you've got is a tool that allows you to engage the conversation, to tease out what the important locations, the important view line, those sorts of things are, versus trying to refine this work, is kind of my gut on it.
I'd say that with viewshed analysis, I feel like the picking the points is the important part. Mm-hmm. Right, you can wiggle left and right, and it changes your viewshed completely. I think it has a lot of value if you pick certain specific locations that you want to preserve. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about future growth, you know,
right.
The corner at Tweeds, the places that you kind of, the screenshots you got, those are places that people are going to stop and look and want to see them outside. And so from every development, I don't think there's too much there. But if we pick for the using this tool, if you pick certain locations and say, here's what we want to preserve, here's that elevation we talked about, all that kind of thing, that's where you get the value out of something like this.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So the next item on the agenda is adjournment, unless anybody has anything else to bring up.
I can mention a couple things on the upcoming agenda before we go to adjournment. So as many of you may be aware, David Miller, our director, just got back from Mestia, Georgia, as a part of the twinning project with that city, funded by the Asian Development Bank. There's a lot of exciting work out of that, and David's going to be giving you a little bit of a preview of his experience in Mestia and things that we have learned initially. That preview is a preview to the more full presentation that he's going to give on September 25th to the full council at a work study. We also want you to pencil in something on your calendar for a special meeting time. Pencil in because we don't yet know the time that the folks from Mestia will be in North Bend. They don't have their tickets arranged yet.
They're getting interviewed with the U.S. Embassy on Friday for their visas. So ideally, they get their visas and the Asian Development Bank can get rolling approval so we could get them plane tickets to be out here tonight.
But what we would like to do, though, is when they are here, we'd like to have a commissioner's night with the folks from Mestia for our ability to learn. So we went there and provided some advice on planning issues to them. They're going to be here, and we have the opportunity to learn from them. So things that staff have learned from our time there, and then things that they have observed from their time in North Bend that relate to planning issues. So we want to invite the Parks Commission, the Planning Commission, and the Economic Development Commission to that. Because the folks from Mestia won't be here on your normal Planning Commission meeting time, we'd like to do that on October 17th, which falls in between your normal meeting times. So we're suggesting canceling the second meeting in October and meeting then on the 17th instead, if that works for you.
Great.
So pending calendar solidification, but that's let in.
You'll send that out as a calendar.
I have two small items.
Okay. I just one question on the calendar, maybe it's just a typo. Under the Mestia, Georgia, item number one, this is scheduled for our September 26th meeting, but you said that David was going to do presentation on September 25th? Or is that October?
Sorry about that. No, so there's two separate things. There's either the 25th or 26th, whichever that it would be your normal Planning Commission meeting night.
Which would be the 26th.
The 26th, thank you. David's going to give an introduction of just some observations.
Yeah.
But the one on October 17th is when we're actually here with the folks from Mestia. So much more opportunity for conversation.
The council work study presentation will be when?
That's correct. That will be on the...
September September
25th would typically not be a work study night.
Right.
Okay.
It would be a Wednesday night.
The 24th?
Well, I was just pointing out if he's doing a whole full presentation the night before our meeting, or a couple
yeah.
of days, maybe we could save him some time and we could just, if we're interested, just attend the presentation.
Yeah.
So that's all I was getting at.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The work study would be the 24th, Mike.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so that might just be a typo. Okay. Just a thought.
Yeah, I think we were a little backwards on that we were thinking it was ahead of the council work study,
yeah.
but it's not.
So. It might not be, yeah. Okay.
Okay, and you have a couple
things. I just want to point out that Chinook Grand Opening on Saturday, you can go by. To me, that's a major event in town, a long time waiting, and so glad that they were able to stay here in North Bend. And Blues Walk is Saturday night, an all great music event.
What time is the Chinook?
They're going most of the day, I believe, and so I don't have the exact, well, I might actually have the exact hours, excuse me. Let's see if I do. Please don't hold it to me, but it's in my calendar as 9 to 3.
Okay.
And the Snow Valley Chamber of Commerce business after hours for the month of September is next Wednesday night at, I think it's at 6 p.m. I'll have to double check the time on that.
That's what I have, yeah.
At Conversion Zone Cellars in North Bend, some little small winery. Yeah. So, and that's open to the public. You would just have to register online. I think there's a $10 fee. Or $10 charge for that. But the topic of conversation that night it's actually a combination of the Chamber, Women in Business, and the Innovation Center. And the Innovation Center will be doing a presentation. Okay. Anything else? Yep. All right, do we have a motion to adjourn?
A motion to adjourn.
Commissioner Bovers made a motion. Who wants a second?
Second.
Commissioner McFarland seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Nope. Passes unanimously. Thank you. That concludes our September 12th meeting.
Thanks, Scott.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Scott.
Hey.
Hi. Wow.